जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय राधा गोपीनाथ राधा गोपीनाथ राधे जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय जय श्री गोपाल श्री गोपाल जय श्री गोपाल जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 Jaya Jaya Gurudev 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 Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Astotrata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop Gopina Shamakund Radha Kundgiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Jamuna Mai Ki Jai Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirae Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Parvati Naishtaki So we are reading today from the, continue to read today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 10, chapter entitled Shiva and Uma Glorify Markandeya, text 29. Please repeat after me. Dharmam Grahayitum Praya Pravaktarascha Dehinam Acharantyanu Modante Kriyamanam Stuvanticha Dharmam Grahayitam Praya Pravaktarascha Dehinam Acharantyanu Modante Kriyamanam stuvanticha Dharmam grahitam prapraya Pravaktarascha dehinam Acharantyanu modante Kriyamanam stuvanticha Acharantyanu modante Vyamanam stuvanticha Matajis, anybody? Dharmam, religion. Grahayutam, to cause the acceptance of. Prayer, for the most part. Pravaktara, the authorized speakers. Cha, and. Dehinam, for ordinary embodied souls. Acharanti, they act. Anumodante, they encourage. Kriyamanam, one who is executing. Stuvanti, they praise. Cha, also. Translation. Generally, it is to induce embodied souls to accept religious principles that the authorized teachers of religion exhibit ideal behavior while encouraging and praising the proper behavior of others. There's no purport for the next three verses, so we'll just read the translations. Text 30, translation by the humble disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This apparent humility is simply a show of mercy. Such behavior of the Supreme Lord and His personal associates, which the Lord effects by His own bewildering potency, does not spoil His power any more than a magician's powers are diminished by His exhibition of tricks. Text 31 and 32. I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created this entire universe simply by His desire and then entered into it as a supersoul. By making the modes of nature act, He seems to be the direct creator of this world, just as a dreamer seems to be acting within his dream. He is the owner and ultimate controller of the three modes of nature, yet He remains alone and pure, without any equal. He is the supreme spiritual master of all, the original personal form of the Absolute Truth. Purport. The Supreme Lord releases His material potencies, and by their interaction, creation takes place. The Lord remains aloof as the Supreme Transcendental Entity. Still, because the entire creation unfolds according to His design and will, His controlling hand is perceived within all things. People thus imagine that God is the direct builder of this world, although He remains aloof, creating through the manipulation of His multifarious potencies. Om Ajnantimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Satsukam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Adati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Itinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, as material beings, till we come to any realization, when we see from the material perceptions, you know, we look at our own family as a small family, the biological family or maybe an extended family of relatives, and then that is our small world in general. To the extent that we can look broader, we can have a bigger vision, and we can see from the spiritual eyes that we have a larger family, and that we are, which can only come when we see Krishna as the supreme personality, as we accept that there is a creator. Once we accept that, then everything falls into place, because to the extent we have that conviction, to that extent we will see everything as part of Krishna, which means that they are all part of the family. So why is it important that we want to see it as a larger family? Because then we actually relate to as many of our actions on a day-to-day basis, to the extent that our conditionings are less, to the extent our realizations are more, to that extent we will be seeing that that this family is in relationship to Krishna, and because of that, I'm one of the children of Krishna. Krishna is the mother and father of all living beings. So this is the basis that which we have started when, you know, Srila Prabhupada's initial preachings also, you see, in 1965-66, his lectures always started that we are not this body, we are the eternal soul, and that we are part and parcel of Krishna. And this, because he hammered that foundation into, because he knew that this is the platform, that even if we keep hearing it initially, gradually, because we are hearing it, we will be relating it to various things, and immediately by relating to it, we actually will see how we have a larger family, therefore our actions would dictate our consciousness would dictate our actions. So, whether we talk of the environment, whether we talk of our lifestyle, whether we talk of our eating habits, all of that is actually could be guided by our consciousness. To the extent that we see the connection with the one supreme creator, to that extent all our actions are accordingly done. And, when we are on a material platform, before we come to any connection with spirituality, we do have a sense of proprietorship that this belongs to me. This is my my responsibility. This is mine. Whether it is our family or wealth or, you know, all the immediate needs, and that will be the thinking of everyone. So this is my house. This is my my car, whatever. But when we come to the temple, nobody says that this is my temple. Yeah, in one sense, in a sense of belonging. But the ownership, we automatically say, this is not my house. This is God's house. This is Krishna's house. Or this is Ram's house, or whichever God. But this. So that is a fundamental thing. And why do we come to the temple? That because we kind of inspire each other, or remind each other, and then inspire each other, that of this realization that Krishna is the proprietor, and ultimately, and that we are part of his entire being, very, very, very tiny infinitesimal being. So this reminding each other is becomes very important, because from that we then, to the extent we meditate on that, or to the extent that it is deeply rooted in our thinking, then to that extent when we go to, say, our offices, our homes, we are sitting in the car, we are in the traffic jams, we are in the mall, we are in the grocery shop, wherever we are, whatever we are doing, then to that extent that gets reinforced. In other words, gradually we are taking a step to see that how it can percolate every aspect of our life, So that it just becomes natural. Whenever we take any thought, whenever we have any thought and take any action based on that, it just flows from that being that Krishna is, there is ultimately a supreme being, and my role becomes very clear that I am a tiny part. I'm simultaneously with him as part of Krishna, but at the same time I have my own individuality, I have my own responsibility, and I am responsible for my actions. So coming to temple, understanding that this is God's house, not my house, becomes very important. I mean, we don't say it, but it actually, it does reinforce. When whatever programs that are there, all temples in the world, that serves a major purpose, that slowly in the subconscious, because when it's a lifelong issue, it will always be in a subconscious level where then only the percolation takes place if it is going to be over days, months, years, decades. And then before we know it, we accept that yeah, I'm going to God's house, and then I like to go there. And then hopefully from there we would take that understanding back to various places that we go ahead. But then this is never easy, because we have always many challenges, distractions, anxieties, which are our immediate responsibilities. So connecting the two may not be, because our mind goes into those issues and we are always completely saturated with that. So that challenge is really where we are always being pulled. And therefore Radhana Swami Maharaj, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, said that realization beyond the theory. The theory is what we understand, that this is God's house and we are part of Krishna. But that realization beyond theory is actually realized according to our enthusiasm to serve, without material motivations, without our selfish egos. So this is the second part, is really where the challenge comes, that the enthusiasm to serve with our complete desire to please others and thereby please Krishna. So if we do that, then automatically this realization will be within us. So therefore it becomes a lifelong matter for us. And we see this in Srila Prabhupada's case, how he, when we go through his events of going from here to the US, again the struggles were, it is a proof to us that everything is a struggle. His struggles were for a larger purpose and they were enormous. We also have our own struggles, but everyone has a struggle. This is the underlying principle, that we cannot escape the struggles. So therefore coming to the temple is not a means to run away from our temples, from our struggles. It is really how we confront it, or how we accept it as part of our life, and how we deal with it. So this the struggles that are there, like in Srila Prabhupada's case, right from the time, at every stage he had, after he met his Guru Maharaj, and then we know that. But when he went before, if you take the journey to the Jaladut and the journey to the US, if we look at it, that how he, he had no money, he had no, we know that he had heart attacks and he had seasicknesses. But see the context. He went on that ship. First of all, he had to literally beg for a ticket. Even to go on a cargo ship, which he eventually did, it didn't come easy. He had to sit on the steps of Sumati Muraji, and she was refusing to give him because she felt out of good thinking that he's too old and he doesn't understand, he doesn't know what it is like. How is he going to survive, his health, etc. But Prabhupada was so determined to go there. And again, see, he had only 1 month sponsorship from this Gopal Agarwal. And as is later revealed, Gopal Agarwal, his father, was very, often used to send requests, sponsor this sadhu, sponsor this, it may be for business, many sponsorship. It seems nobody went. Prabhupada was the first one. So Prabhupada, actually suddenly Gopal Agarwal and his wife get a letter saying that, I'm coming. So they were shocked. And then in Sally Agarwal's words, later on she said that I was not expecting, I mean, we were really shocked and we were worried, we were embarrassed. How will we talk to our neighbors and present? Because they had, it seems Gopal Agarwal was the only Indian in their whole area. And at least he was in suit and all that. Here comes Prabhupada with his pointed white shoes. You know, he had that the hat, you've seen, I don't know how to describe it. In the cold he used to have it, which we see in the sadhus have it. And he was in saffron robes. And then, so they were feeling so embarrassed that they put him in the YMCA. So, Prabhupada went on a 38-day journey for 1 month sponsorship. So he was expecting to come back after another 38 days. So, it is inexplicable that, and that for that first he was begging, and he was sitting there for hours and hours. Finally, she was telling, Mrs. Muraji was telling secretary that, what does he want? He said he was not going to go unless he meets you. And then finally he persuades her. He gets that and then he goes to Calcutta and then he goes to Mayapur, comes back and goes on the ship. And then we know how much he suffered on that ship. Now, after all that, knowing that he has just 1 month visa and 1 month sponsorship, 2 month visa, 1 month sponsorship, doesn't know how he's going to survive. And in his own words, Prabhupada said that when I stepped off the ship, I didn't know whether to turn left or right. He didn't even know whether anybody will be there to receive. Because in those days there was, you know, communications were only by letter mainly. And he was told that somebody will be there. So in that context, then few days before he reaches, then he writes this poem. So in the context of that poem, after the struggles to board, after going to, and then virtually dying, and then he has a dream when Krishna comes and, you know, rows the boat and, you know, gently strokes him and then takes him away. And then he spent such a long time and also not knowing how he's going to, what he's going to do, how he's going to land. There's no fear, but there is a sense of intimacy. That is the intimacy which comes where he now is, you know, he's now in his poem he's saying that, I don't know why you're taking me, I don't know what you want from me, Krishna. So it is really that personal dialogue between Krishna and his devotee. And please remember that Prabhupada did not expect, nobody expected that this will be known to the world. He wrote this poem not that it is going to be sent to millions of people around the world. At that time he wrote it as an expression of his love, his feelings, what he was. He would not have been surprised when he survived that, those two attacks. He could have got another one in the ship or when he landed. So he was perfectly, he had no expectations. But his only concern was how I can please my Guru Maharaj and Krishna. That was his only concern. So if we see from that point of view, this is like the epitome of the conviction that somebody can have in service. That with no conditions, no expectations, probability of not surviving the cold and the food and all. And even if he did, he would be coming back another 38 days and who knows how, just because the Atlantic was peaceful when he went, which is very, very rare, low probability would not have meant that even coming back he would have had it. So, you know, it was not his concern at all. He knew that he was going on a long ship and 76 days of travel for 1 month. And after that, depends on what he sees. But that is a mood in which he says that I'm a puppet in your hands. Make me dance. Not to publish anywhere. It was really just this feeling, direct feeling to Krishna that this is where I am. Take me, whatever you do, I'm powerless, I'm helpless. What is your will? Please show me whatever you want me to do. So, and then in the US also, the first 10 months from September 65 to June 66, before he gets the matchless gift, is a complete struggle, where he has so many things. But amazingly, in that struggle also, his mood is not only optimistic, but just look at his service attitude. In spite of, every day walking half an hour to cook his food and then, the refrigerator had non-veg also and he would say, don't worry about it. He was not he wasn't perturbed by that. He would say, just don't take attention, don't worry about it. He was looking at the US, his preaching was so strong, desire was so strong that he was looking around to see what is the American culture, how are they receiving Indian culture, what is their lifestyle. He was fascinated by the supermarket. He used to stroll in the, and this is way before he met any of the devotees. He would stroll, as he said, he was just walking around, you know, looking around, strolling to see, loitering to in the shops, also seeing whether his books are selling or not when he came to New York. His mood was only that. Believe it or not, he even went in New York, he went to one South Indian dancer's show. This is Bala Saraswati, a dancer called Bala Saraswati. Only to, can you imagine in an American theater, you know, with all American people suited, booted probably and all that, they would come to see. And then Prabhupada has come there. What was his purpose? To understand how Americans would accept, are accepting Indian culture. So he was completely disregarding the kind of challenges that he was having, which was a poverty-stricken man. He had nothing. He didn't know where, whatever money was coming. And, you know, he was at the kind of mercy of Dr. Ramamurthy Mishra for some time, and who became his friend, but they were completely philosophical apart. So he kept on. But his Monday, Wednesday, Friday program started not in the Bowery. It started in that loft when he came to... before that David Allen tried to attack and kill him. So see his mood of preaching. In this difficulty, there was one level where he was suffering enormously, not knowing when he'll die. But he was rising above that level. His level was, what is my service, how I can do it, what I can, what is needed for that. This will go on, I may be there or not, and completely alone. And then he writes letters to, you know, various people from Indira Gandhi to big businessmen and his godbrothers and Sumati Muraji and all. And again, look at his vision. He's seeing three-storied buildings in New York, saying this is perfect for a temple. And he was going around with one person called Robert Nelson, who was actually just a, you know, as is described by Satsarup Maharaj, that he was just a country boy, a simple country boy. Almost like he had not much understanding, but he liked Prabhupada. He never chanted, but he was liking Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would sit with him, and then when he was resting, the two of them only in that loft. And that loft also was what? No window, no telephone, no bathroom, no shower, no chair, no sofa. It's like a prison. But Prabhupada just got that place, and then he started. So they're lying there, and then he's talking about Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. And, you know, look at Prabhupada's thinking. You know, he was even after he started his programs, four people came. He was so enthusiastic. So this is we may not imagine, but we know it is a fact that how a person of the highest level has just passed us in this, we have been so fortunate of living that kind of ideal life where difficulties may come. So in all this, the principle is that, the challenges and the difficulties are there. It is actually Krishna's mercy. Krishna does this to glorify his devotees, and also he gives his highest lessons through the medium of his own pure devotees. Just like in the Mahabharata also, the war, Kurukshetra war took place. So it was such a, in spite of Krishna himself trying to make peace, but Duryodhana's arrogance and so on did not allow, and then they had to, so just about the war was going on. But because it came to such a situation, what came out was the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita, which is really the basis of everybody's life and understanding of Krishna's teachings, came out of a hopeless situation, seemingly hopeless situation. So sometimes in the most darkest times, externally what is darkest, like in Prabhupada's case, and we see that what happened is history. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita also came out of history. So basically, Krishna creates these greatest challenges, but if somebody is steadfast and carries on, then that will be eventually reflected. Also, when the nectar was churned, and the Samudra Manthan took place, there was such intense rivalry between demigods and the demons, asuras and the suras. But what came out was nectar. So basically, we see that the nectar of Bhagavad Gita also came out of such a situation. And in the Mahabharata also, the war was against people who were very dharmic. Bhishma was the commander-in-chief, and he's a Mahajan. There are only 12 Mahajans, and he's right up there with Lord Shiva and the four Kumaras, etc. And he's an exalted personality, but he chose to be on Duryodhan's side. For, there are many dimensions to many reasons we can say what made him take that. But the underlying point is that he chose to take this knowingly because he was willing to be Krishna's puppet. He was willing to be misunderstood for the rest of eternity and perhaps criticized heavily, but still he went through because that was Krishna's will. And what is the proof of that? The proof of that was that when Krishna eventually was, and Bhishma's stature, of, even as a Kshatriya, was such that he, even Lord Parshuram could not defeat him. So he was given the benediction that he will not die unless he decides. So with that kind of power, and Duryodhan made him the commander-in-chief knowing that victory is assured because we have such a person who will not die. He's next to God. Even the Arjunas, even the Pandavas were not assured that. So here was Bhishma. So in that scenario, Bhishma's internal role, internal thinking was that he always loved the Pandavas. He was always for Dharma. He loved the lifestyle of Pandavas. He hated the lifestyle of Duryodhana. He may be bound to do it, and there are reasons and so on. But the most important principle is that he was really willing to be playing Krishna's role for him, in spite of being misunderstood. And therefore, later on, Krishna takes the Pandavas after the war, after Yudhishthira's coronation, and Yudhishthira is, you know, lamenting that, you know, because of me, all this happened, so many people died. But that was his humility. So Krishna takes the Pandavas to Bhishma, who's lying there for months. You know, he had the benediction, he could die. He was waiting and waiting, and waiting in what a situation. He was on a bed of arrows. Now that is also explained that Bhishma Pitama was, first of all, in the war itself, he only tells the Pandavas how he should be killed. He only tells, and he's very happy telling that. He's revealing the secret, that telling them that this, and then he's telling Arjuna that you have to make sure that there is not even one space of one finger between two arrows. So he gives full details of how his demise should take place. And then on that, he's lying there. You can imagine how painful it must be because every organ of his body must be pierced through, you know, through and through. So while he's lying there, and that for months together after the war is over, and Krishna brings the Pandavas there. So actually, the reason we see is that Krishna brought the Pandavas because Yudhishthira and, Maharaj felt that, Krishna felt that Yudhishthira Maharaj should listen from Bhishma, which was true. But Shastra says that actually the real reason, Krishna needed that excuse to go to his pure devotee because Bhishma was waiting for him. And Bhishma would not leave till he saw Krishna. So in that sense, Bhishma lost the battle but won the war. Because ultimately, when Krishna promises that I protect my devotees, that protection is not that I'm going to protect your wealth. He may or may not, or protect your life. He may not. But his protection is that he is there when you need him the most. This is where what we need, the lesson that we want, that if we steadily, sincerely serve Krishna, then finally at the end of the day, whenever we need, when Krishna will, that faith we have that Krishna will provide the situation where he will come there, or his associates will be there, somebody will be there. So Krishna comes here, and that Bhishma had that steady faith that Krishna will come, and Krishna came. So the real reason he went there was that his, he wanted to meet his pure devotee prior to his going to, leaving his, at the right time, you know, when the sun entered the northern hemisphere and so on. The perfect alignment, and when Bhishma chose. So this is one principle that we have. The sufferings that we may see are actually created by Krishna for our purification, of course, but also for understanding that it is to glorify the devotees, to make the principle that only when we go through that situation that we, and something great does come through, like the Bhagavad Gita came in the, through the war, and the nectar was, example of the nectar was there. And Prabhupada's own example we see, and many of the sufferings of, you know, Prahlad Maharaj or Haridas Thakur, any, all these great saints who went through severe sufferings, it has come through to give a lesson. The lessons come from Krishna through this great, to his pure devotees, to his greatest devotees. And Krishna saves Bhishma Pitama also here. So therefore, the definition of greatness is also not someone who has such a bank of good karma. We are not concerned with good karma and bad karma because that is something which is not in our control in this life, and also which is something which is temporary. But the definition of greatness is only of somebody who chooses out of his free love, free will, to surrender to Krishna by steadily accepting and tolerating and embracing it eventually, all the difficulties that come. Another principle that Prabhupada also, that Krishna does show through his great devotees, how association of pure devotees is critically needed. And this comes through in the story of Maharaj Prithu, where Maharaj Prithu had actually done 99 yagyas, Ashwamedh yagyas, and he was about to perform the 100th when Lord Indra, because of his insecurity, comes and steals the horse and disrupts it. So Prithu Maharaj was furious actually, and then Indra is actually very, very ashamed. So this is the scene when Indra comes with Lord Vishnu to beg forgiveness, and he's really very ashamed. He falls at Prithu Maharaj's feet. So Lord Vishnu very beautifully extols Maharaj Prithu's virtues, and that is when he makes this point that one who does not possess elevated qualities and behavior cannot possibly achieve my favor simply by performance of sacrifices or severe austerities or mystic yoga. So basically he has laid down what actually is needed. So and then he goes on to say that, but I will always remain equipoised in the heart of one who is also equipoised in all circumstances like you. And then Prabhupada writes in that in the purport that anyone who has developed unalloyed, unflinching devotional service unto the Lord develops his original good qualities as a spirit soul. Then, in response, Prithu Maharaj, he glorifies the Lord because he was said, take any benediction you want, you are such a wonderful soul, etc. He said, I don't want any benediction. He says, I only want the association of the pure devotees. And then the wordings he uses is very beautiful. It says, when the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. That means we come as a forgetful living entity by everyone. But then this lovely analogy of the aroma of the saffron dust which emanates from the mouths of great devotees. And so therefore he says, just give me that association of pure devotees. So this reinforces that for us, this is the lifeline, absolutely critical for us, and it comes in so many forms. It's just for us to take it. Lifeline literally means that the line is there. If you're sinking, if you accept it, you can take it. If you don't want it, that's yours. You may say, I don't like this color, or I want it only in this form. It's there, you just take it. So that lifeline, for us to even understand and recognize that it's a lifeline, it's a blessing. Because that's where we don't know how we have got, and many others will not understand that. But having understood that, to take it means to take that lifeline means to then incorporate the words of the spiritual master, the acharyas, into our life, to start implementing it. When we start implementing it, then Krishna is always reciprocating. This reciprocation from Krishna via his pure devotees or directly is what we've seen in the life of Maharaj Prithu, Prabhupada, Bhishma, and the examples we've seen. And that's what we will recognize in whatever we do, that reciprocation comes in various forms. It is not the way we see it. It is the way Krishna will think what is best for us. And then finally, and then Prabhupada again writes in the purport that in our material existence under the influence of illusory maya, we have almost forgotten our eternal relationship. Although when a pure devotee speaks, the articulation of his voice may resemble the sound of this material sky, The voice is actually spiritually very powerful because it touches the particles of saffron dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then he, the living entity, immediately remembers the eternal relationship with the Lord. So actually the power of why Prabhupada installed the system of Srimad Bhagavatam every single day, why Prabhupada, there were certain principles he laid down, was essentially to know that this the scriptures are the word of God. This Bhagavatam is not different than Krishna. So recognizing Krishna may come over time, but if we follow a sadhana process, listening or hearing or reading, along with our other lifestyle changes, then gradually this saffron dust, the particles of the saffron dust and the aroma that comes from the mouth of the pure devotees, which is also elevated devotees who are guiding us, when they are speaking, then this is really the because that is touching the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, the power of a forgetful living entity coming out of his forgetfulness and slowly remembering his real entity, that's how it works. So we actually now seeing the formula also we understand. But accepting that formula means it's a sacrifice. I mean, it needs that we need to make those changes. And in today's verse, also we read that the Lord or his shows by his ideal behavior by himself or his associates, and that also is it is his mercy actually. It is his humility that he, but actually it is his mercy. so that in the story of Jai Vijay, when who were the doorkeepers of and associates of Lord Vishnu, when they did not recognize the four sages, the four the Kumars, the sages, and then they blocked their entry. So Lord Vishnu himself comes, and then at that time he comes and apologizes on their behalf. So this is how the Lord exemplifies his ideal behavior, that he is actually coming and saying that what they have done is that they have offended real genuine Brahmins, and offending Brahmins is a very grave issue, and because they are my representatives, it is my fault. The word Lord Vishnu uses is the disrespect shown by my attendants has actually been shown by me, because the doorkeepers are my servitors. I take this to be an offense by myself. Therefore, I seek your forgiveness. And then he says, and now that you have realized me without doubt, therefore, that is telling the Kumaras, I will not hesitate to lop off my own arm if its conduct, that is the arm's conduct, is found hostile to you. This is how the Lord actually reciprocates with his pure devotee, saying that I will not hesitate to lop off my own arm. No, the Lord begging forgiveness is something which is...
I didn't get that.
Sorry. I don't know how this came about. In the four Kumara story, the Lord himself is begging forgiveness. And then why does he love the Brahmins? When he talks about the Brahmins, because what the Lord says is that the Brahmins, the genuine Brahmins, are the ones who want to share the glories and knowledge of the Lord to everyone, to all all over the world. And because they are so keen, they dedicate their entire lives to that purpose, the Lord is so grateful. So that is the reciprocation. The Lord is so grateful to them. While he is completely impartial to all, but he is very protective, especially to those who are actually presenting or sharing these glories and doing it in the greatest of odds, whatever the challenges that are in front of them. At this reciprocation also we see several examples. when Lord enters Indraprastha all the ladies who were there on the rooftops and everywhere, and they were the ones who, the Lord interacts with each and every one of them on an individual basis. So, on one hand, they all are together because they are, we all are actually part of the Lord. But on the other hand, each individual entity has a personal relationship with the Lord, and the Lord actually creates that relationship based on our reciprocation to Krishna, or our surrender to Krishna. So Krishna's reciprocation and customizing His relationship with us, individualizing it, depends on our approach to Him. So each Atma is unique, and each Atma has his own personal relationship. Same is with when the Yajnapatnis also, when they were the wives of the Brahmins. These Brahmins are supposed to be the gurus or the representation of society, but they forgot or they could not recognize the Lord because they were so engrossed in the minutiae of their Shastra. So when it came to the Brahmin Patnis, who had not much academic background, but who understood the essence of their life and Krishna's role and their relationship with Krishna, spontaneously they surrendered, and then how Krishna reciprocates with them. And Krishna knew it, so He wanted to glorify them for times to come, all times to come, by asking His friends to go to them after seeing that the Brahmins are rejected. Same with the Kaliya's wives, the Nagapatnis, that they, in spite of seeing that how their powerful husband was not only humiliated but virtually almost dead, and they understood the Lord's role, and they said, whatever you're doing, they never excuse there were no excuses for the husband's behavior, but it was just a plea on mercy. And Krishna immediately reciprocates and says that because of you, I'm relieving him. And it is to Kaliya's credit that he then changes. He has that humility to accept the humiliation. And then, so on various occasions, the Lord constantly, moves, reciprocates with various devotees. And if you see that, none of us would want to associate with people who are envious of us, isn't it? We would not like to associate with anyone who is wanting to take the credit from us. And and that is what we are doing with Krishna. So we are envious of Krishna, and because just by ignoring him and by actually taking his role, taking his credit, think that we are doing this. In spite of that, Krishna is so compassionate that he is reciprocating. So we should remember this fact, that that he ignores our failures, he is ignoring our offensive behavior, and still he is available. The only thing is we have to reach out. You can take the horse to the water, but you can't force the horse to drink. It's like that. He's bringing right to the doorstep. He's giving us everything. All we need to take the step, because that individuality, that small independence that we have, is something for us to reciprocate. And for that, if we were to, what is our general refrain? We say, I have my conditions that, first of all, I should be happy. My definition of happiness is this. This is the way it should be. My dreams, my aspirations, which are all on a material level. There's no place for Krishna. And here is Krishna who's created everything, and then still he's waiting just, behind our shoulder, inside us, everywhere he's just waiting. How you take a first step and I'll take 100 steps. So that reciprocation is available, that help is available, and that, in spite of our ignoring him, maybe we may have been in our agnostic moments spoken ill about him, criticized him, laughed at him, or him, or his associates. So many things we may have done, but he has completely ignored it. And then for many people who he has actually given them the chance, and therefore it is our the opportunity for us to reciprocate by rising above, by understanding first what Krishna has done for us, and then by rising above our weaknesses, struggling at least to rise above our weaknesses, to execute this devotional service by gratefully accepting our Guru's service and making it a lifelong mission. So we'll stop here, and if there's any questions anyone has. ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय।